Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe, for the next hour. We're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Special guest on this edition of UFC Central will be Adam Burns, the sportsbook manager for Bodog. We'll talk some mixed martial arts wagering, how the lines get put together, some tips and advice on what you need to do when a line gets put out there, and stuff like that. We'll get into that with Adam Burns in a couple minutes or so. We'll also be joined by E. Spencer Kite of Sportsnet.ca and UFC.com a little bit later on to talk about the latest and greatest from the world of mixed martial arts. We will break down the two shows going down for the Ultimate Fighting Championship this Saturday, one in Australia, one in Brazil. They are all on UFC Fight Pass, or sorry, they are both on UFC Fight Pass. They will not be airing on Sportsnet. They were never planned to be aired on Sportsnet, so I don't want all you people that have been hitting me up on Twitter and ripping apart me or Sportsnet or just MMA in Canada in general. Everyone needs to relax. They were never part of the schedule, to my understanding, so everyone needs to be patient. If you missed it, I did write a column for Sportsnet.ca. I try and write the Ask the Insider columns as much as I can. Try and do it weekly. Sometimes I can't because of the travel schedule and other stuff that I'm doing on Wednesdays. But there were a bunch of questions that were asked. I addressed them. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to save some for the radio show. I'd like to have some on the radio show only because some of them I need more time or more space or more just a bit more of a discussion. And there's a couple of them that sort of caught my eye. Louis Lee J wrote in, with the lack of smaller Canadian organizations and the UFC focused on entering other markets, do you feel Canada MMA is suffering? Now, it's a great question, but it opens up a whole bunch of different arguments when you think about it. Now, the Canadian and North American scene, in my opinion, people are saying it's saturated, it's too much, and I've always said, no, it's not. If you think about it, if the UFC is going global, there are different time zones, there's different markets, there's different ways of growing a product in different countries. And in doing so, it's not that they're forgetting about the North American market. They're trying to grow those other markets as well. Now, the Canadian market, in my opinion, is completely in disarray just the way it's being run, and it has more to do with politics than it does with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Now, can the UFC get involved and help out a lot more? Yes, absolutely. But I don't think it's a priority in the UFC Canada office. I think what they need to do is focus on what they've always been focusing on, and that's, of course, selling pay-per-views and getting their product on television and all that jazz. In my opinion, I mean, the way you grow Canadian mixed martial arts is what other countries are allowed to do via amateur mixed martial arts, have a great development system, and of course, grassroots MMA, a step below going pro, developing that across the country. And you've seen me talk about it in the past. You've heard me talk about it in the past. You've seen me write about it. There's only so much that a guy like myself or even the fans or the fighters can do. I mean, if the things don't change with the government, it's just never going to happen. And being Canadians, if we just think for one second, take a look at the model of hockey. You know, the minor hockey system is absolutely fantastic. We develop some of the best hockey players in the world. That's a fact, and that's because it starts at a young age. There's a development system. The cream of the crop generally rise to the top. And then it gets to from junior hockey, it moves up to the AHL, perhaps the East Coast Hockey League, CHL, OHL, QMJHL, and then they eventually get drafted to the NHL, and then from the NHL, it gets better. So if the NHL is the UFC, work your way down. You don't have that development system in Canada yet, and no matter how hard we try and do it, if the government people that are regulators and stuff like that don't change or don't agree to it, it's just not going to happen. So is MMA suffering in Canada? It has been, realistically speaking, since day one. So it is what it is until that changes. You know, I really can't sort of fault the UFC, although if they decided and want to really put a hand in there, put their hand in that pie, I think things could change. But again, another story for another day. George One UFC fan sends in, any idea what that special announcement for the UFC is coming up in a couple of weeks? I don't know. I know they released a press release saying the time is now, where a bunch of the guys and girls that are competing in the main events, co-main events, and contenders will be in Las Vegas to do a little press junket, but they'll make their announcement there. I've asked around. I don't know what it is. I'm trying, but it is what it is. Monticello SE writes in, will the emphasis on hashtag UFC Fight Pass cause a drop in UFC popularity here in the mecca of MMA? Now, I brought this one up. I just talked about what happens with the popularity popularity here in Canada, but this whole mecca of MMA thing, I've been trying forever to get people to understand we are not. Canada is not the mecca of MMA. That was a long time ago, guys. Come on, stop with this. We are not the mecca of MMA. That's Brazil. Brazil is the mecca of MMA. Always has been, perhaps always will be. Canada, we had a great run. But look at what I tweeted out and mentioned a Shudo show. A Shudo stadium show in Brazil. That's crazy. That is absolutely awesome. We'll never have that here unless things change. So the mecca of MMA is not Canada. People have to kind of let that go or come, you know, get with the times. It is not the mecca of MMA. Not for a while. It may be once again. Hopefully it does. But the popularity in Canada, there's a whole bunch of reasons why the popularity has dropped. It's not gone. That's for sure. I mean, I see the ratings on Sportsnet whenever my show was on or whenever the UFC was on. So the popularity is still there. Can it get bigger? Yeah, and I think it will. It's just, you know, we got to buy our time. Play it safe. So we'll see what's up. Matt's going to kill me because I keep saying his name wrong. He knows I always say it wrong. But Matt, I'm assuming it's Geisbrecht or Geisbrecht. He'll hit me up on Twitter to rip me apart there. But we'll see what's up. With the calendar announcement on November 17th, where do you see UFC events coming to Canada next year? Very good question. I mean, I think Toronto will likely have an event in the summer, not in September. I think it'll be in the summer, in my opinion. I think Montreal will still be a go for March of 2015. I think that's where we'll see Rory McDonald potentially get his title shot. I am hearing Ottawa. I am hearing Edmonton. I know the UFC does want to go back to Calgary. I know there was a bad taste left in their mouth with some of the press, but I do know they do want to get to Calgary. Winnipeg is obviously on the horizon. Halifax was a success. I can see them returning there, but you know, it's so difficult to say because we saw what happened when the announcements came earlier on. Now we're going to go here, there, and blah, blah, blah. And then things are fluid. Things change all the time. But I think the Ducks are a bit more in a roll right now for the Ultimate Fighting Championship. But again, November 17th is when we'll know. It's 10 days away or 11 days away, to be honest with you. Let's pay attention. We'll see. Hopefully they'll have all kinds of events across Canada, and hopefully my fingers are crossed I can be there to cover the events. All right. Let's not waste any more time because joining us on the line is Adam Burns. Adam Burns, like I mentioned earlier on, he is the sportsbook manager for Bodog. And we'll get to some conversation right now about betting in mixed martial arts. Mr. Burns, how are you today?
Hey, not bad. You, Joe?
I'm doing pretty good. And obviously, one of the big topics in mixed martial arts, I think over the past few years now, is, hey, let's put some money on there. It makes it a lot more fun. And Bodog's been around for quite some time setting these lines. And I want to ask you, whenever you put together a line, what are the intangibles? What goes into it before you make it public?
Well, it's sort of a little bit of a process. It depends on what type of line we're putting. If we're putting something up really early, let's say a big event, big fight, we'll probably try to put it up a few months in advance. Normally, we post lines the week of a regular event, like the two events this week. We just posted them this week. And the smaller events like Bellator and whatnot, we'll probably post sort of the day before, the day of. But when we're doing any of these lines, the process sort of goes like this. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be an MMA expert, but I oversee a team of guys that put up lines for all the different sports we offer. But I have two or three sort of go-to guys for mixed martial arts and for boxing that sort of take care of all that. The first thing we're going to do is sort of look at our database of past lines and all these fighters. We have quite a list of opening and closing lines for all the different fighters, how they were bet when we opened them, how they were bet, you know, the day of the fight, how that sort of worked. And we'll kind of compare, you know, if they're going up against a similar type of opponent. And we'll use that sort of as a bit of a gauge on what should be about the opening line. Also, what's going to happen, too, is once we post that line, we have maybe four or five really what we consider sharp MMA bettors. And they're usually coming in as soon as we post any line, whether it's months in advance, the day of, week of. And we're going to kind of shade towards those guys. I would say about 80% of the time, those four or five guys are probably on the right side of the line move, and it's going to move towards what they bet. And they hit and win about 60% of the time. So that's also another tool that we'll use, and we'll respect people who are really in the know. And over time, I mean, my guys have become more in the know as well, and sort of following these guys and looking at our database of past odds. And you'll see some lines where we could be way off. I mean, if you look at that we just posted, we were the first ones to post the Wordham against Hunt. We put it at minus 250 when we opened. Right now it's at minus 450. So maybe we were a bit off on that one. But at the same time, we posted that Ronda Rousey fight, minus 750. It's only at minus 900 right now after a couple of weeks. So that one we were pretty bang on. But it's going to happen. I mean, sometimes we'll put up a line and maybe we're a little bit off, and we'll look at how those sharp bettors bet, and then we'll sort of adjust and go from there.
So does it become a chasing game if you put that line up too early, where you look at an example like Fabrizio Verdum versus Mark Hunt and you realize, whoa, we were off here. Let's hope money comes on the other side to even this out?
Yes, initially. But what happens is when we post something up so much in advance, by the time the fight comes, it's taken so much money that that initial little position that we've had, the early money on Verdum is not going to really impact the fight. And what happens a lot in MMA, and this is sort of the story of our lives here, especially with the big pay-per-view events, is whenever there's a big favorite in a main event, so in this one, a minus 450 favorite, or Ronda Rousey minus 900 favorite, what happens is we offer parlays as well. So people love to parlay all these big favorites together, put four or five of them together, six or seven of them together. You know, we had a guy a couple years ago hit a 12-team all-favorite parlay, you know, for six figures. And the, for any time those big events happen, is people like to parlay the big favorites, but at the same time, the average bettor likes the big payout betting on the underdog on a single bet. So if you're betting against Rousey, getting plus 550 or 11-2 odds, people like that. So it's sort of one of those situations where if you can understand that if all the favorites hit on a card, normally we're going to lose a lot on parlays. We're always going to need sort of one dog to hit, sort of a parlay killer that we call it. But at the same time, that parlay killer, if it's on the main event, we could take a big loss too. So it's always a tricky situation, kind of stressful for myself and my guys when we get to those big events. It's sort of, you don't really know what to cheer for. Do we want the favorite to win and take the straight money and kill that underdog money? Or do we want the favorite to lose and kill all the parlays? And a lot of times it will depend on the event. If there's a big underdog that wins early on in the card, we'll probably look pretty good. If all the favorites win throughout the day, then it's going to be kind of a tricky situation for us.
Well, I mean, you look at 2014, it's been, you know, almost dubbed the year of the underdog. I mean, is that good for Bodog?
It depends. Yes, like I said, for parlays, it's great. But at the same time, there's the people who like betting straights on those underdogs. So some events, it's gonna be about 50-50 on how that happens. And people buy into that. Like if one card happens and all the favorites win, you better believe that the next card that comes up, we're seeing a lot of favorite money. If there's one where there's a lot of underdogs that hit, the next card we're seeing a lot of underdog money. And people sort of buy into those little trends. I find out it's not only in MMA, but in a lot of sports. If a team's really hot, they're going to keep betting them. If they're not, they're going to bet against them. And they're not really looking at the exact matchups. They're just kind of looking at trends. And I'm not a huge trend guy when it comes to this sort of stuff. But we are aware of that, right? So we will know that if all the favorites hit on one card, maybe we're a little bit higher on all the favorites on the next one just to avoid getting killed on parlays, because we know sort of where people will come in.
You're listening to UFC Central right now. On the line with us is Adam Burns. You can follow him online via Twitter, at Bodog Burns. He is the sportsbook manager for Bodog. Adam, in terms of you look at the money that is coming in early on versus the money that's getting closer as the fight goes to fruition, where do you see the balance in terms of is 25% of the money early, 75% late? How does that usually work?
Yeah, I would say even more comes late. I would say maybe 10% of the money comes in early, and a lot of it's from those sharper bettors, the guys that maybe have a little bit of an edge or a little bit more in the know than us, and maybe they have some inside information. They kind of know where the line might move. And so those guys, that, you know, maybe 5, 10% is coming in right away. So you'll see line moves initially as soon as we open that line, especially the ones that are months in advance. You'll see a really quick line move, and then later on it will probably, you know, settle in a bit for a couple months. Then the day of the fight, that's where 80, 90% of the money comes in. People start getting excited about it. You know, they're going to watch it with their friends. All kinds of things play into it. And then we'll see the big volumes of money come in then. But it's really important for us to really monitor the first couple of days, how these lines are bet, so that we could come to a solid number. And it's not like the old days, like 10 years ago, when there was not a lot of people putting up lines on MMA. You know, now the European books are doing it in Asia, and so there's a big market for it. So at the same time as us putting up our own line, which is a risky thing to do, when we're the first ones to post, which we are sometimes we're not, but when we are, it's a risky thing to do. And then we're going to, once the other places and the market starts opening up, we're going to monitor them as well and make sure that and you'll see sort of the thing that people kind of stay within market and take their own little sides and positions. But those are all things that, I mean, it's a constant job for myself and my team just to stay on top of, especially once the fight comes up, the day of the fight, and then all these other places open up. We got to be aware of what kind of numbers they're putting as well.
When you take a look at mixed martial arts in general and wagering on mixed martial arts, obviously it's a newer sport in comparison to, you know, football and baseball that people have been betting on forever. You know, have you seen a growth in mixed martial arts over the past years where you can say, wow, this is getting bigger and bigger? It's not going to be Super Bowl level, but eventually it's going to get so big where, this is some serious stuff here.
I would say about 5 years ago is when we really saw a jump in it. probably 4 or 5 years ago, we started seeing growth of, 200-300% year to year on the amount of money we were taking on these events. I think it's sort of tapered off a little bit. I think it's a little bit saturated right now. There's so many cards in short periods of time that sometimes, some of those cards get lost in the mix, but the pay-per-views are still really big. The big UFCs are really big. The fight nights and the smaller events, they're not as big, but people still get involved with them. But I would say, 5 years ago, we really saw a jump, 200-300% growth. Like I said, it's sort of tapered off a little bit now, but it's big enough that, I have to have 2 or 3 guys on it all the time, keeping an eye on these lines sort of 24/7, just because of the amount of money that comes in. Unlike 5 years ago, where I could tell one guy, okay, check the lines once a day. We're sort of on top of it, like I said, all day, every day, especially the day of the fight. I have 2 guys sort of working every card, and one guy's watching all the props that we put up, which is also really big. How is a guy going to win by KO or by decision, total rounds? That stuff's actually really popular as well. Prop betting in all the sports across the board has really grown, too, and even in mixed martial arts. I'll have a couple guys just the day of the fight doing it. And we also, for the big events, we'll offer live betting as well. During the fight, you can bet in between rounds. And people enjoy that as well, just like in all the other sports, in NFL, baseball, live betting. It's one of the things that we've really expanded on over the last couple of years.
Well, you took 2 questions straight out of my mouth, and I guess the next one is live betting, because live betting can be very, very difficult and very, very, productive for some people, because you take a look at a fight, you got a heavy favorite going in there in round one. You look at a guy like TJ Dillashaw, he was such a massive underdog, versus a guy like Cannon Burrell lands that monster right hand. I'm sure that live betting just completely flipped. In a situation like that, what goes through your mind?
Yeah, like I said, we have guys literally watching the fights, running the lines as the fight goes on, and they're sort of taking that into account. If someone's a massive favorite, minus 1,000 or minus 500 favorite, and they clearly win the first round, that line's jumping up to minus 2,000, minus 3,000. But at the same time, it's the nature of fighting is that, like you said, one punch and the fight's over. So you won't see lines go too high too early, especially in the 5-round fights. We'll sort of kind of wait, and then it's the same thing when we put up a line. We're going to see how people bet it. If someone's minus 1,000, they clearly win the first round, they go to minus 2,000, and people are still betting it, okay, maybe we're right. But if people come in big on the underdog, well, we'll drop that a bit, and you'll see those lines fluctuate quite a bit. And like I said, we don't do it for every fight, but the big fights, the main events, the main cards, it does take quite a bit of action. And live betting, some people love it, some people don't, but if you're sitting around with your friends watching the fight, you're like, this guy's a 10-1 to come back, I'll throw $10 on it, $100 on it, and try to go for a big payout. And people really like that. That really appeals to a lot of people.
I'm not the biggest wagerer per se. Actually, I don't wager at all on mixed martial arts. I just don't feel it's right for me to do so. But I do pay attention to the lines, because I've always been intrigued by wagering in general, especially when it comes to sports like soccer and football, and having a guy like yourself, Adam Burns, online. By the way, make sure you follow him online at Bodog Burns, the sportsbook manager for Bodog. It's very intriguing to me. In terms of props, you did mention props. What are some of the favorites that folks like to put money on?
People really love the method of victory that we call it. So how is a certain fighter going to win the fight? Will they win by knockout? Will they win by decision? Will the fight go to a draw, which is normally around 75-100-1, which very rarely happens, but people like throwing bucks on that sort of thing. But those are really big, because you could get someone like a Ronda Rousey, who's minus 900, if you get a minus 200 to win by knockout, or you can get someone to win by even KO or by submission, who's a submission artist, at a lot lower odds than what they would have been on this fight itself. So people like that. I don't have to put $900 down to win 100. I could put 200 to win 100. And Rosie's probably going to win by KO. Obviously, if it was that easy, I don't want to be rich. But that really appeals to a lot of people. And we've really noticed the growth in props. Like I said, 5 years ago, MMA itself was growing 200-300% a year. I would say the props within the last year and a half is even more than that. Sometimes the props will actually decide our day. If we have a big UFC event, maybe we did okay 50-50 on the fight itself, and it will come down to how did we do on those props. It just shows how much money they started taking, and it's not something that we just put up for fun anymore. It's something that we really have to take into account into our final numbers. And when we look the next day, how do we do? A lot of times it will come down to how we did on those props.
I'm wondering what Bodog does in a situation where, for example, you mentioned you got, you know, those three or four sharp bettors at the very beginning when that line comes out and you sort of follow what they're doing. But then you get closer to the fight, the weigh-ins take place or the day of the fight. All of a sudden you see massive money out of nowhere coming in from one or two people on a certain fighter. What do you do in a situation like that? Because you got to assume they've got insider information. There could be an injury. There could be something going on the morning of that they saw perhaps walking around the MGM. They saw a fighter not looking too good or injured or limping. What do you do in a situation like that when someone tries to drop huge money on a fight like that?
Yeah, well, we have pretty big limits for UFC, and we'll take big bets on it, and we always accept over-limit bets if we feel the line is right. When it comes to the weigh-ins, you'll always see a couple little moves on the fights, depending if someone is, you know, a little overweight, a little underweight, not looking too good. There's always rumors, right? We're following people on Twitter. We're reading reports. We're looking at all the websites and seeing is anyone saying anything about certain fighters. What's the mood? Are they touting any certain fighters? Because you know what? People like listening to people in the media, you know, experts, you know, sort of like yourself or whatnot, that will say, you know what? I really like this guy tonight. Even if you're not a big gambler and you're touting that sort of fighter, we'll see people buy into that. So we got to stay sort of a step ahead of people and know, you know what? If someone's touting someone, if someone said this guy might be injured, if someone said this guy's a bit out of shape, we're going to do our best to keep on top of that, and that will skew the line a bit. So if we hear these things and then someone comes in and wants 10 grand on a certain fighter, well, you know what, we might adjust the line a little bit for them based on that information. But at the same time, the day of a fight, let's say we need a fighter really big and money's coming in completely on one side, we will move the line as well a little bit on money to make ourselves in a comfortable position for us. And, you know, we're still managing our risk at the book. But if all the public and, you know, guys that are just betting the favorite because they think he's going to smash, but those four or five sharp bettors are on the other side, we probably won't move the line as much, and we'll sort of respect what they're betting and take a big position on a fight. And you know what? Sometimes it doesn't work out, and the next day, you know, I'm sick to myself, but that's the nature of the business. But we do respect sort of the media, the experts in the business. We respect the sharp bettors, and we'll skew the line towards them. And sometimes we're comfortable even taking a huge six-figure decision on a fight just based on their information or what side they're on. But at the same time, sometimes if the position gets too big, we still have to move the line and manage our risk. You know, we still have to be accountable for the amount of money we sort of take on certain fights and positions we do take.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Adam. It is comical at times whenever I start seeing people always, you know, finding me on Twitter and asking, hey, Joe, who do you like in this fight? Or the minute something happens when I mention it on the show, it's, oh, Showdown Joe said this, I'm going with this. I'm like, don't take my advice. I'm only saying based on the numbers and the trends, this guy should be doing this, this girl should be doing that. Yeah. So I know exactly what you're saying. But before we let you go, I'm sure people listening in are going to wonder, hey, listen, I want to put some money down. I want to bet on this person, that person, Verdum or whomever. What do they need to do?
Yeah, you just go to log on to Bodog, and then it's pretty simple to sign up right at the top. Sign up, put in your information, and there's various deposit methods and whatnot, and we have great customer service to help you out through that process. It literally takes a couple minutes, and like I said, we offer quite a vast array of MMA, try to put up as much as we can, boxing as well, all the other sports. And like I said, you know, if you don't want to bet on the fight itself, there's all those fun props, total rounds, how they're going to win the fight, what round they'll win the fight in. And like I said, it's really, really growing pretty big. And it's a busy weekend already. You know, there's a ton of fights coming up. And me and my guys were busy this morning getting it all up. But they're all up right now to bet on.
Listen, thank you very much for your time. And I look forward to having you back on again. Sincerely appreciate it.
Sure, anytime. Thanks, man.
There you have it. Adam Burns from Bodog. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter, at Bodog Burns. He is the sportsbook manager for Bodog. Lots of lines being put out there. And a little backstory there. Just the way he explained everything, I've got goosebumps here. I'm not a wagerer, like I said, but it's interesting to see how that dynamic is all put together. All right, coming up after the break, Spencer Kite will join us from Sportsnet.ca and UFC.com to talk about the latest and greatest from the world of mixed martial arts. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. As always, special thank you to 40 Sons for the anthem for UFC Central Radio. Make sure you check out their track, Hurricane, on iTunes. And you can also check out this show on iTunes. You can subscribe. Don't be silly. Type in UFC Central. It'll come up there. Subscribe. You'll never miss an episode or a broadcast, and you can always listen back to some of the other interviews that we've done in the past, other shows and stuff like that. You can also just go to sportsnet.ca/MMA, click the link at the top, the UFC podcast, UFC Central podcast, and take it from there. Okay, so we heard from Adam Burns. Now we're going to hear from Spencer Kite from sportsnet.ca and, of course, UFC.com from all the latest and greatest from the world of mixed martial arts. We'll tackle some of the headlines right now with Spencer. Mr. Kite, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Joe. How about yourself?
I'm good, man. It's kind of cold out here on the east side. What's going on the west side over there?
As you would expect, it is rainy and overcast. It is November. We have entered our rain period.
Well, there will be some sunshine on the horizon this weekend, as there are not one but two UFC events going down. Obviously, they are on UFC Fight Pass. To my understanding, they will not be airing on Sportsnet, which is understandable. And another conversation for another day, but the one in Australia, you got to think is, you know, there's some headlines out there thinking about this for a second. Luke Rockhold, Michael Bisping, they are selling this fight like you would not believe. The Australian fans are already going nuts, but I think Michael Bisping, as much as he has proven every one of us critics wrong, he's going to have a hard time with that southpaw Luke Rockhold. What are your thoughts?
I think so as well. I mean, I love the fight. They've obviously been jawing at each other for probably a year now. Bisping said some stuff back before a fight about, you know, training with them once and getting the better of it and sort of pulling back the curtain on the training room, which is a bit of a no-no. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I just envision Rockhold as a bigger, stronger, faster version of Bisping, really, and coming from the southpaw position. There's more things that he does well than Michael Bisping, where Michael usually has the edge is in conditioning, and he's able to just wear you out and that high-volume, high-pace approach. But we've seen Rockhold do that in the past against high-level guys. And really, if you want to get down to brass tacks, he has bigger wins against bigger name opponents in Jacare and in Tim Kennedy during their Strikeforce time. So really a tough matchup for Michael Bisping, but who knows? I mean, he's the kind of guy that just when you count him out, he goes out there and throws up a great performance. So this one should be really entertaining.
So much of mixed martial arts, though, is mental. And with Luke Rockhold continually saying, I'm going to finish this guy up in the first round, if this thing goes to round two, do you think he's strong enough to say, whatever, I just said that and who cares? Or is it going to be a situation where it's like, I didn't finish this guy?
Well, I mean, I think he talked a little bit about the fight with Vitor Belfort and how he built that up to be something even bigger than it was and was fighting with emotion. And I think this time around, a lot of the talk is just that. It's just talk. It's just sort of, obviously, he wants to go in there and have a great performance. He wants to go in there and beat Michael Bisping and kind of shut him up a little bit. But I think Rockhold has figured out his comfort zone in terms of where he needs to be mentally in going into a fight. And so, yeah, he wants to get that first round finish, get a third straight first round stoppage in the UFC. But I think if it goes to two or three or four, the distance, he'll be fine throughout.
Ross Pearson taking on Ally Aquinta, a nice little lightweight co-main event here. I mean, we think about Ally Aquinta, he's a bruiser. He comes from the Ray Longo, Matt Serra camp, and he's just a tough, tough guy. But I can't help but thinking about Mitch Clark, who defeated him with a Darce choke at UFC 173, and we haven't heard much about Mitch Clark, but here's Ally Aquinta now in a co-main event taking on Ross Pearson. I mean, there's so many different angles with this lightweight division. What do you make of this fight?
This was a fight that really kind of caught me off guard, a little similarly to you in thinking about Aquinta kind of falling asleep a little bit against Mitch Clark and then actually being put to sleep by Mitch Clark. Pearson looks great against Ross Pearson, against Gray Maynard. Obviously had the fight with Diego Sanchez, but he quote-unquote lost. And just sort of feels like he's a little bit of a cut above Aquinta at this point. But at the same time, it's a fight that makes sense for Al because this is the kind of guy he needs to beat to go forward and climb the ladder in the division. I think the UFC has some interest in Ally Aquinta. They obviously came off the Ultimate Fighter. He looks like a guy that has the potential to maybe put it all together. And so getting him a fight with another Ultimate Fighter veteran in Ross Pearson, a guy that's sort of established as being just outside that top 15, well-rounded guy, is an opportunity to see if Al can take that next step. I just don't know that he's going to be able to. He still gets tagged up a little bit too much for my liking in every fight. We saw it against Rodrigo Daum last time out. I just think Ross Pearson is a little bit too crisp and a little bit too clean at this point.
You look at that Rodrigo Dam fight, though. I mean, Al did come out victorious, but he was winning and winning and winning, and then he's getting tagged, and he's coming back,
right,
and gets tagged again. And you think to yourself, what is going on here? I mean, can you expand on that? Because it had me puzzled. I felt like he was going to win regardless as the fight continued. But like you said, I thought to myself, that's not good, dude.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that just bite down on your mouth guard and throw hands and trust your chin too much in Al at this point. I think he gets a little loose with his hands when he's on the offensive and when he is actually having success. As you said, he was in control throughout, but there were just periods here and there where his hands would come a little low and Dom would counter with a really nice left hand or catch him clean. And you think, well, if that's somebody with a little more pop, if that's somebody with a little more experience, things get dangerous here. And I mean, if you look at the Mitch Clark fight, he was dominating that fight right up until the point that he left his neck open and Mitch capitalized. It was a beautiful, beautiful finish, beautiful choke. And I think that's sort of the little area that separates where Al is at now to his ultimate potential, I think. If he can clean that up and sort of shore up that boxing defense, not eat so many punches, I think he has the potential to go on a nice little run here. But until we see that, it's tough to see him getting by a veteran that has that clean technique, that can capitalize on those openings like Ross Pearson.
You're listening to UFC Central. On the line with us right now is Spencer Kite. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter, at Spencer Kite. He writes for Sportsnet.ca, UFC.com. He's got some excellent pieces, and he's one of our pals. He's one of our boys, actually, with Dwayne Finley. What's going on with you two guys? Because you guys are popping up everywhere. What's happening here?
We just sort of, you know, he and I kind of enjoy life out on the fringes a little bit, outside of the spotlight, but doing our own thing. Dwayne has been having an incredible year this year. I know you have followed it, and I know a lot of the listeners have followed it, his road trip this year where he went all over the country, all over the United States, touring some of the biggest gyms, talking to some of the best fighters, as well as emerging prospects. So it's getting around that time of year where awards get nominated, and obviously Fighters Only has their World MMA Award. So he just put a little piece out a couple days ago saying, you know, I really think this is something that needs to be recognized. Dwayne's not a guy that's going to jump out and sort of thump his chest and shout from the rooftops about himself very often. And so a few of us have kind of jumped in line behind him and said, you know, if this isn't just a popularity contest, and I don't mean that with any disrespect for the people that regularly get nominated in that MMA Journalist of the Year category, but if it's about the work, if it's about what people are doing, myself, Brandon 610 Gibson, Cub Swanson, all sort of have gotten out there and said, this is the most unique, creative, outside-the-box, in-depth piece that we've seen this year. It's been an ongoing series from January through till the end of the year. And so just kind of trying to drum up some support for our boy and get him a nomination for some fantastic work that he's done this year.
Well, he's getting my nomination as of right now. So, you know, I mean, I don't get nominated for these awards. I think I did once in 2009, but then I fell off their radar, which is understandable because of where they're located, where we're located. But it's that whole Canadian bubble. You know the drill. Nobody knows what you and I do, or at least
right.
I do, unless they're in Canada and magically sort of gets out there. So, but for a guy like Dwayne, I think it's fantastic. If anyone wants to get this going, what should they do?
Pull up Dwayne's Twitter or Instagram at Dwayne Finley MMA, retweet the post that he put up about it, or find Brandon Gibson's post that he put up about it at Six Gun Gibson. And once the award nominations officially open, we will definitely be on social media, hounding people, reminding people to nominate the road trip and Dwayne for his work this year.
I'm on the bandwagon, to say the least, for sure. All right, let's get back to this Australia card. Two things I want to talk about. Number one, lightweight Jake Matthews taking on Wagner Hocha, and of course, welterweight scrap between Vic Grulich and one of our own Chris Clemens. Jake Matthews, I mean, this guy is an absolute stud. He's a youngster. He is huge for this division. I mean, this kid's future is absolutely bright. And I think despite the fact he's on Fight Pass, despite the fact that he's the last fight on the preliminary card, this kid's going to make some big waves, I think, in 2015.
I think so. I've been fortunate enough to talk to Jake before each of his fights now in the UFC. And you just get a sense from him whenever you talk to him that he's a kid that gets it. He's 20 years old, but he sounds like a seasoned vet. He knows that he has the potential to have a 12, 15, 20-year career, depending on how things play out. And so he's comfortable taking it literally one fight at a time, taking those small little steps, knowing that it's a marathon and not a sprint. And when you see, look back on the fight with Deshaun Johnson, his debut, you love the transition in the third round into the triangle choke. You love the fact that he was dominating the action through two rounds and continued to press for the finish. It's those little things that sort of trigger belief that he does have that elite potential. I think we'll probably see him start moving around a little bit more in terms of where he's training. He's obviously been over to Jackson's in Albuquerque to train with Kyle Noak and everybody there following his time on Tough Nations. But I agree with you, just a kid with a ton of upside.
And Chris Clements taking on Vic Grujic. I mean, Vic's one of the nicest guys you are ever going to meet. Chris and Mency, I mean, Mency's a great guy, as is. I've known him for years. But at the same time, this could be an interesting fight for Chris because Vic's going to have that hometown support. And Chris, in my opinion, I mean, this guy can't afford to lose. He's got to keep winning and put together a streak here.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to come off a year away or more than a year away for Chris and come off a loss and coming off sort of winless in his last two and then still get a road game against a tough guy like Vic Grujic, who, you know, is just another one of those tough veterans that's going to hang in every fight, going to make it tough for you. We saw him against Nordin Talib earlier this year, kind of made it that type of fight where you think he's going to get finished or you think he's going to sort of wilt and he just doesn't at any point. So this is a big fight for Chris. I mean, obviously, as you said, a guy that's been around the Canadian scene for a long, long time, had some impressive performances, picked up a couple good wins in the UFC, but now sort of faces that very challenging test of flying halfway across the world and looking to rebound from two straight setbacks. So I think it should be a very good fight. It's one of my sleeper picks for fight of the night just because of the fact that they're veterans and both gritty dudes that will stand in there and leave it all in the cage. But a very important fight for Chris, absolutely.
And speaking of flying around the world, we now head to Brazil where Maurizio Shogun, who was in the main event versus OSP, Ovince St. Pro, should have been Jimmy Manoa, but OSP now steps in there. And two things here. I mean, A, the matchup itself. I don't know if OSP is considered a tougher matchup than Jimmy Manoa. I think he is. Some people are saying no. But Shogun also said that, hey, listen, I know I'm coaching the Ultimate Fighter the next season in Brazil with Anderson Silva. I'm not opposed to fighting him. And I thought, oh, boy, here we go. There's more headlines. What do you make of this whole situation? A, the fight, the replacement of OSP over Jimmy Manoa now taking on Shogun, and then Shogun saying what he says.
Yeah, the fight is a little bit different. I don't know that it's tougher or not as tough. I think it's just different. OSP brings a little bit more movement, a little bit more awkward angles in his striking than Jimmy Manoa does, who's more of a straight-line kickboxer, but has a little more power than OSP does. So there's obvious trade-offs there. I think this is a really important fight for Shogun. As much as Tough Brazil 4 is already booked and he'll definitely be the coach, he kind of needs a win here and needs to look good in order to keep some of that, I guess, sort of Shogun shine. And we still all hold him in that reverence, and we will forever. He's a legendary fighter. The things he did in Pride and the successes he had speak for themselves. But he appears to be in decline and hasn't had a lot of success since losing the title to John Jones. And I think if he is going to continue to be a guy that headlines these Brazilian shows, that carries that prestige of his name, he needs a good performance here. And so I think focusing solely on OST would be better than maybe talking about, hey, I'd fight Anderson Silva if that's what the people want, because Anderson has plenty to deal with himself, having been hospitalized earlier this week and having Nick Diaz on the horizon and that little thing about coming back from a broken leg at age 40 to worry about too. So let's get to that one when it happens and if it happens and hope that Shogun, one of the greatest in the history of the division, has a really good performance this weekend at home.
What went through your mind, Spencer, when the announcement came out or the report came out that Anderson Silva was hospitalized with lumbago? I mean, I thought to myself, uh-oh, this is not good, dude. Back pains, your advanced age, mental, coming in, like you said, with the leg injury. I mean, I don't like this.
It's For me, it goes back even a year when the videos started coming out of here's Anderson Silva walking down the stairs, here's Anderson Silva kicking it. Like, I don't see why he's necessarily coming back. I understand from a competitive sense and a wanting to do it sense, more power to him. I'm the last guy to tell anybody to walk away. Do what you want to do. I'll always watch you fight because you're the greatest of all time. I got nervous when he jumped up on the cage with Fabio Maldonado. I mean, I was thinking, geez, please just get down from there easily, safely. Don't let anything happen. Don't step on a cord. Don't screw anything up. And then to see that he was hospitalized, it really does send up that red flag of reminding you that Anderson Silva, as great as he has been, as accomplished as he is coming up on 40, which is an age where you don't really associate high-level athletics anymore. So coming off the broken leg, having this back pain and kind of losing feeling in his legs, it makes me nervous. And as much as I want to see the fight from a fan perspective of him and Nick Diaz, I just worry that we may not actually get there.
Co-main event, Ian McCall, John Lineker, calling and paging Demetrius Johnson. Do you think the winner of this fight gets that title fight?
I think a little bit of it hinges on how Jussie Formiga looks later this year. He's got a fight coming up in December against John Moraga. I think if Jussie wins that fight, he may get the opportunity just because he hasn't fought DJ yet. But I think if Uncle Creepy turns in a really good performance, you can very much make that third fight between him and Mighty Mouse. I wrote a piece for Sportsnet earlier this week just talking about Ian McCall's last couple of fights. We've started to see the Uncle Creepy that came into the UFC as the top flyweight in the world that has wins over Jussie Formiga, Daryl Montague, and Dustin Ortiz outside of the UFC. Looked great against Brad Pickett. We really saw the complete skill set from him, and if he can do that again against John Lineker, a guy with nasty power for the division, I think you can make a case that Ian gets that next shot, because that's a fight that, if you look back at that first fight, should have went to round four. He would have had all the momentum. We could have a very different division if things didn't play out the way they did. So I think that intrigue and that interest is there. Plus, Creepy's one of the few guys below sort of 155 pounds that has a name, that has a following, that can help really sell a fight to that degree that it needs to, because we've seen DJ struggle with that a little bit. So he may be the perfect kind of foil to Mighty Mouse.
Could be interesting, and we'll see what happens on Saturday night. Next weekend, I'll be interviewing George St. Pierre at the Gentlemen's Expo on stage, asking the questions that people want to know from GSP. Chances are I might save some of them and get the fans to ask the questions, because you know they're going to ask the same question over and over again. They want that answer. Will George St. Pierre come back? And there's one question that came to me earlier on as part of my Ask the Insider column, and the question was, listen, if Rory McDonald becomes the champion and George St. Pierre is thinking of coming back, what does GSP do then? I said, I'm going to ask that same question to Spencer. What do you think?
I think Rory's situation doesn't necessarily have any factor on George. I think I've been really impressed with George in sort of this period since Dana White happened to bump into him at the same restaurant in Montreal, and all the talk started about, is GSP coming back? Is this what they're figuring out? I like that he's continued to sort of maintain, like, listen, I'll decide at some point, and it'll be about me. It'll be about whether I'm ready. It'll be about whether I'm mentally there and believe I'm capable of being the best in the world again. Because I think we both know that George isn't going to come back to be a guy in the middle of the division or outside of the title picture. If he comes back, he wants to be the very best there is in the welterweight division in the UFC. And so I think a little bit of where Rory's at and what Rory's situation is might play into there. They've talked throughout that, you know, they don't want to fight each other. Nobody at TriStar wants to fight a teammate. And I think that holds true. But I think the decision ultimately will be just based on George and his body and his mindset and whether he thinks he can do this and whether he wants to do it again. He's talked extensively about how much it just consumes his life. And so maybe he's enjoying not having that right now. So I don't think where Rory's at and what Rory's situation is will have as much of an impact as just his own decisions.
What about 185 for George St. Pierre? You think he'd entertain that?
I think he might, because he's that kind of competitive guy. I know he said very recently that he's walking around at 200 pounds, which is bigger than he was. Obviously, we talked about it years ago, sort of when the talk of super fights with Anderson Silva and cleaning out the division was around. I don't know that George has the frame and the body type to be able to compete at 185 long term. I mean, most of those guys are sort of cut down light heavyweights, and so George would be a bulked up welterweight. He's not even actually really that big for the welterweight division, and so technically and skill-wise, I think he can hang with just about anybody in the world, but it may be a case of just being a little bit too small, regardless of how much muscle he's put on, to be able to compete at 85.
Oh, it's going to be an interesting 2015. Listen, thank you very much for taking the time. I want to wish you the best of luck, and I look forward to hearing from you soon.
Always a pleasure, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
There you have it, Spencer Kite. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter, at Spencer Kite. All right, before we let you guys go, some important information. I did mention the Gentlemen's Expo. Follow my timeline. I'll let you know exactly what time I'll be on stage with George St. Pierre. You can also check out gentlemensexpo.com. Follow them on Twitter, at the Gentlemen's Expo, via Instagram as well. But another big thing that is happening in the city of Toronto that I'll be checking out at the St. Lawrence Center for the Arts, a double screening for Bobby Razek, MMA. It's a double film screening of The Mask and The Rites of Patches. Now, Rites of Passage. Mask, of course, from Tap Out fame, passed away a while ago. This is a wonderful, wonderful... It's going to be a great evening. Check out the Facebook page. Again, it's going to be on my timeline. Check it out. You definitely want to come check it out. Check out the movie. It's going to be a great night. More from Bobby Razek next week. I'll have him join the show. He is one of the best, if not the best director when it comes to mixed martial arts stuff. The guy is absolutely amazing. But double screening in a couple of weeks. It'll be on November 19th in Toronto at the St. Lawrence Center for the Arts, 27 Front Street East. I will be there. It is going to be a great time, but we'll have Bobby Razek describe that and much, much more next week right here on UFC Central. You have been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.